Thank you, Christopher. Linda will come share our gospel reading. The gospel reading this morning is Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 38. But I say to you that listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A measure pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. Amen.
These teachings come from the heart of Jesus' ethical teachings. Love your neighbor as yourself, expanded for us to hear and think about the different ways it plays out in our lives with other people. There's so much here, but I found myself this week mostly stuck on what Jesus was said about enemies. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who persecute you. Pray for those. Bless those who hurt you. Pray for those who persecute you. Sorry, I wrote it wrong in the text. Most of us have heard these words all our lives, so I think maybe sometimes we don't hear them. We can miss how radical these words are. I actually think maybe many of us have been conditioned by knowing these teachings not to want to admit that we have enemies, not to admit our anger and alienation from certain people. So when I ask you who your enemies are, it may be hard for you to answer right off the bat. I'm a sports fan. Bill and I are both big sports fans. He's a bigger sports fan than I am. And I must confess, I think part of the joy of being a sports fan is it's sort of a sanctioned, okay way to have enemies, right? Us versus them. We're the good guys. They're the bad guys. You can yell and scream as much as you want. And of course, the last 2 weeks, in addition to the Super Bowl, we've been watching lots and lots of Winter Olympics because we always get caught up in the Olympics. Individual athlete stories, different pulling for certain people and certain teams. It's a lot of fun, I think. And there is a release, a catharsis. But Bill and I also tend to kid ourselves a bit during the Olympics because we have to admit our nationalistic biases that come out watching the Olympics. Pulling for the Americans, how many medals have we got? But also, there's some biases about other nationalities, I confess to you. Could I really pull for a Russian against a Canadian? I have some North American biases. Could I pull for Chinese against the British. I might have some Western European biases. They all come out in me watching the Olympics. It's human. It's conditioning. It's what we've learned growing up and living our lives. And Jesus taught us a very different way, a way beyond the tendency to see some as other and some like me, some us. And we know his teachings, and as good Christian people, I think we really want to say that we love everyone. And yet, perhaps the way to start with these teachings is to admit that there are people in our lives who feel, at least feel, like enemies some of the time. Maybe one way to get at this, who feels like an enemy, might be, I was thinking about the movie, The Breakfast Club. You know that old movie where there's a group of teenagers that all get stuck on the day's detention with the people they don't want to be with at all, the people they see as their enemies, basically. And so it made me wonder, who are the four or five people I would least want to get stuck with for a day, with no escape? Think about that one a bit. I can admit there are quite a few people I would not want to be stuck with in detention all day tomorrow. So I may not want to label them as my enemies, and yet there are plenty of people I don't like, I don't agree with, I don't care to be around in any shape or form. In these politically polarized times we're living in, there's all sorts of people, frankly, that can feel like my enemies. Public figures, politicians, and media stars saying and doing all sorts of things I disagree with. All sorts of people acting out in ways that I find pretty deplorable. It's pretty easy for me, actually, to see them as enemies. People spreading lies. Lies about the last election, lies about vaccines, lies about what the Democrats are doing or what Joe Biden intends, lies about the events of January 6th last year. And then there are those people working to undermine voting rights, especially the voting rights of people who are poor and people of color, because, of course, there is that underlying assumption that they really shouldn't be given equal and full access to power. I find myself seeing them as enemies, enemies of freedom and democracy. And of course, this week in the news, we are very aware of many other potential enemies to think about. I don't often agree with Franklin Graham. He might be on the list of people that I sometimes feel like is my enemy. But this week I did agree with him when he called on us to pray for Vladimir Putin. Putin, who in my mind seems bent on violence and war, on domination and control of Ukraine, on deceit and misinformation. For all I can see and know, he is acting as an enemy of peace and goodwill. And Jesus tells me to pray for him, to love him. How do I love a man like Vladimir Putin? And there are also those people much closer to home who can feel like enemies, old friends who've gone a very different way theologically and politically, who show up making comments at a reunion or post something on Facebook that just drives me nuts. And there are those family members, right, who've somehow ended up thinking and believing very, very differently from me. How do we deal with them? Can we admit to ourselves that sometimes they feel like enemies too? And if all these folks feel like enemies, what is Jesus saying? What does it mean to love them, to do good for them, to pray for them? Yesterday was the 80th anniversary of the order by Franklin Roosevelt in 1942 that led to the internment of over 100,000 Japanese Americans. The American government, in the midst of that war, turned on these people, these Americans, because of their Japanese heritage, their Asian looks, and labeled them as enemies. Our government, out of fear and distrust and racism, took their homes, their assets, took them away from their jobs, and made them prisoners of war. And afterward, when it was all over, no one's felt responsible to do the work or spend the money to give them back all they had lost. At the time, our government acted as if what we had done was right, was justified. So when we look back at that whole episode, we have to ask, who was the enemy in that time? Who acted against the principles of fairness and justice? And so I think the question isn't just who we feel are enemies, but who also may see us as enemies and why, and what do we do with that? In adult education today, we're going to begin talking about the history and rights of the Cuyuga Nation and other indigenous people of our state. People who again and again were labeled as enemies to justify violence and wars and seizure of their land and destruction of their cultures. How could they not see white people and the American government and the dominant culture as their enemies as all that happened to them? And how do we today judge our histories, and what do we do with our current relations with those people? In Black History Month, I always try to make the effort to learn something more of Black history because I got so little of it in school. A couple weeks ago, I watched the Ruby Bridges story on Netflix. It's actually really well done, and it's a powerful story. I mean, I've known her name, but to learn more about the details, a little six-year-old girl who was chosen out of a group that took tests because she was bright and capable, precociously so, really, chosen to be the student who would integrate the local elementary school, which was all white. Do you know that for months there were white adults who showed up day after day to yell and scream at her, to spit at her? One woman had a black doll in a box that looked like a coffin that she waved in her face. U.S. Marshals had to escort her day after day after day to keep her safe. And that school, forced to integrate for the entire first year, refused to put her in a classroom with other children who were white. So for her entire first grade, she went to school by herself. She couldn't go to the bathroom with the other kids, she couldn't have lunch with the other kids, and she couldn't have recess with the other kids. When I learn a true story like that of Ruby Bridges and her family, I am moved and humbled by their deep Christian faith and courage that helped them get through that terrible ordeal and gave them the strength to fight for justice, for a better America. They had real enemies threatening them, hating them. Can you imagine those parents? These people were doing this to their child. And they found a way to endure that experience without turning to hate themselves. Their faith, the love they knew through Jesus Christ, helped them to try to again and again choose a different way. A way that was about trying to love their enemies and pray for those who were persecuting them. Over the years, I've thought a lot about many Black Americans I've known, older, who grew up in Jim Crow South, who lived through the Civil Rights Movement, who have still today to deal with so much discrimination and ongoing racial injustice. And I've wondered again and again, how do they find the way to let me, a white person, be in their lives, to love me, to let me be their friend? How do they not see me as an enemy? The government structures of our country and our society, the vast majority of so-called white people for so much of our history, have treated Black Americans as enemies, as other, as not truly American. So the surprise is not that there are Black Americans who are angry and resentful and distrustful. The surprise, the grace, is that there are so many Black Americans who are still willing to keep giving white people a chance, who continue to hope and pray and want to work together to build the beloved community, as Jesus taught us. Jesus taught us a different way. Not an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but a way of transforming initiatives, of looking for ways to change the dynamics of relationships, to get out of bitter cycles of injury and revenge. I did some reading yesterday on the history of Ukraine and Russia. Centuries, centuries of history. Of complex relationships and revenge and conflicts over relationships across between Poland and other parts of Eastern Europe, Austria-Hungary, Russia. Jesus calls us to see what we have in common with those who are the most different, those who seem the most unlikable, and those who seem the most threatening. Can I today look at Vladimir Putin and see not just the Russian president, not just the former KGB officer, not the wealthy, one of the wealthiest oligarchs in the world, not the man who is seemingly has in his hands the power to bring Ukraine and Russia into war, but can I also see a human being, a man who has fears and hopes? Can I see a man and hope and pray that he has someone who loves him and someone he loves back? And pray that somehow that love might make a difference in his actions this week. Jesus calls us out of transactional relationships, out of quick judgments about who is for us and who is against us. Jesus challenges us to move beyond thinking about what we can get out of a relationship. What credit is it, he asks, if you only love those who love you back? Even sinners do that. We are called into God's kind of relating, God's kind of loving. God, as Matthew's version of this sermon says, God sends rain on the just and the unjust. God makes the sun shine and the moon rise and the earth turn for all people everywhere. God's mercy is ever present, ever flowing, ever available for every human being, every living thing, the earth itself. Can you feel the energy? Can you feel the love freeing up and flowing as you hear Jesus' words? Love your enemies, do good, lend expecting nothing back. Your reward will be great because you'll be living as children of the Most High. Because God is kind, kind, even to the ungrateful and the wicked. So be merciful as your heavenly parent is merciful. Don't judge and you won't be judged. Don't condemn and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and you will receive back. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over will fall into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back. I love that image. I see the measure of grain or the scoop of rice pressed down, shaken together, and still flowing over into our laps. That's how God gives to us. Jesus calls us to live into that generosity, that flow of God's mercy, to let the goodness and the goodwill, the giving, flow in and out of us. We can't generate it of our own willpower. We can only live and love in this way as we know God's great merciful love coming into us. I watched the creek near our house this week. It was really frozen over, mostly blocked up from so much cold. And then there were those couple days of warmth, and then that torrential rain. And as Keegan said, the ice blocks got busted open. And the creek's bed was filled up and the water flowed powerfully, freely. The flow of God's love, the power of God's mercy. We're called to just let it come through us. We're not supposed to create it. We're just supposed to let it happen, to be open enough to know it's here, to receive it, and then find ways to pass it on. That's the way to live into love, to love even those who are most our enemies, to see beyond enemy and friend, and to know we're all held, supported, filled with the goodness and grace of God's mercy and love.